This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Welcome to Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio. This is your host, Tim Link, and I'm so glad you're joining us today. We have a wonderful guest and a really interesting novel to talk about. Of course, we're talking about author Sarah Driscoll and her latest, Deadly Trade. It's part of the FBI K-9 novel series. And we want to talk to her a little bit about the book and the ins and outs with that out, giving it all away. And then, of course, we'll talk to Sarah also about writing in general, because she's a master at her craft and wears many, many hats. So we want to pick her brain a little bit about how she does all that wonderful stuff. So everybody hang tight. We'll come back right for this commercial break. You're listening to Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio.
Take a bite out of your competition. Advertise your business with an ad in Pet Life Radio podcasts and radio shows. There is no other pet-related media that is as large and reaches more pet parents and pet lovers than Pet Life Radio. With over 7 million monthly listeners, Pet Life Radio podcasts are available on all major podcast platforms. And our live radio stream goes out to over 250 million subscribers on iHeartRadio, Odyssey, TuneIn, and other streaming apps. For more information on how you can advertise on the number one pet podcast and radio network, visit PetLifeRadio.com/advertise today.
Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio. Joining me now is author extraordinaire Sarah Driscoll. Sarah, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
Oh, it's great to have you here. And I was excited when I got the book because obviously I'm familiar with the series. And then I didn't realize at the time how many other series and things you've been involved in. So I do want to talk about that. But mostly I want to talk about the latest book, which is called Deadly Trade. And it's part of the FBI K-9 series. So tell us a little bit about, without giving it all away, a little bit about the book, maybe some of the characters in there. And of course, we got a dog extraordinaire in there. So we know it's got to be a good book if the dog's in there.
Absolutely. So the FBI K-9 series, Deadly Trade, is actually the 10th book in the series. And the two main pro tags in the series are Meg Jennings and her search and rescue black lab, Hawk. And Meg has had a past before as a sort of a patrol K-9 officer with the Richmond Police Department, but when her dog was shot and killed in the line of duty, she kind of pulled back from the police department, went back to her parents' animal rescue in Virginia to kind of heal and kind of recover from the loss of her previous partner. And a sick little puppy gets tossed on their doorstep. He's got parvovirus and he's on the verge of death. And she helps nurse him back to health. And this is Hawk. And so then she wants to stay in law enforcement to an extent. She doesn't want to go back to being a patrol handler. So she teaches Hawk search and rescue skills. And so they become contracted by the FBI and they join the Forensic Canine Unit and the Human Scent Evidence Team, to be specific. So they are live find scent dogs that are as part of this team. And she's one of four dog and handler teams. The other sort of main, her main partner, his name is Brian Foster, and he has a German Shepherd named Lacey. And so, but there's two other dogs as well. There is Rocco, who's a border collie. There is Theo, who's a bloodhound. And so, you know, sometimes just, you know, Meg and Hawk are needed. Sometimes it's Meg and Brian. Sometimes it's all four dogs. The book that I'm currently writing, which is the next one in the series, all four dogs are on site. So these are live find dogs. They're looking for the lost or the injured. They respond to natural disasters. The third book in the series, Storm Rising, there's a hurricane that they respond to. There's a building collapse in the eighth book in the series, and it's in Washington, D.C. So again, all four dogs are you know, sort of first on site. In this case, in Deadly Trade, Meg meets a firefighter in the very first book, in like right at the beginning of the story, and they've just gotten married. You know, at the end of book nine, they get married. So that's not really a spoiler at this point. So they go to Hawaii for their honeymoon. Hawaii, nice. Of course, is still FBI jurisdiction. And they spend the first week sort of taking it easy, you know, being really relaxed after the stress of the wedding and the previous case, which had been in Colorado, which had been very stressful. And of course, they're out doing some hiking because they want to sort of keep their, you know, their healthy lifestyle up because they're all sort of hardworking, working people. And of course, they have Hawk with them when they are going through a remote fern forest and they run across a bunch of wildlife traffickers. So the last half of their honeymoon gets turned into, you know, an FBI case.
Nice. Well, I read through that, thought, okay, and good. It's a great mystery. It's a great canine thing. We've got great characters in there. We've got the dogs in there. That's good. It's in Hawaii, probably my all-time favorite place. And then all of a sudden, it just turns into an FBI mystery. So my first inclination was like, oh, those poor people. Then my second was, oh, I wonder if they get to write that off as a business.
Well, that is what happens, is that all of a sudden, you know, the FBI picks up the last half of their honeymoon stay and all of a sudden. It did actually kind of turn out to their advantage, although nice. They did not get the week off that they had planned.
There you go. So the bright side of it all, for sure. Yeah. Now, the mystery itself, you know, and what they uncover, are there any unique things that pop up that readers would either say, okay, I'm sort of familiar with this location. Is this a plausible thing? Does it seem like, why didn't I see some people that were, you know, doing poaching and doing all these things when I was on the island? Were there any little unique things that popped up? It's like people would say, oh, yeah, or oh, wow, I didn't know.
Well, part of it is just the remote locations. So when I was planning this book, I was looking for places where some of these birds would be found, and sort of stepping back a bit for a larger picture. Hawaii is the extinction capital of the world. They think that they have lost more species than sort of the rest of the world combined.
Ah, interesting.
And so there is an IUCN red list, which you can look up any of these species that are going extinct, and they have maps of all of their, you know, sort of remaining locations. And so you can sort of layer these maps on top and find areas where you could possibly find the remaining birds. And for some of these birds, there's like only 1,000 left. And there are only, you know, it's only on one of the Hawaiian islands. If you're talking about the Hawaiian crow, there's only about 120 to 150 left, and they are all in captivity. They're trying to reintroduce them. They've tried to reintroduce them back on the Big Island, and it didn't work because the Hawaiian hawk, who is also, you know, running towards the extinct level, was picking them off. So they're going to try and introduce them now on Maui, which does not have the Hawaiian hawk. So they have hopes of bringing the species back. But so the areas where you would find these birds are not typical areas that would be considered touristy sort of sightseeing spots. And when I was planning this, I picked the Pu'umaka'ala Natural Area Reserve. And on very short notice, my husband and I decided that, you know, I decided that we needed to go. And of course, my husband's a good sport and he came with me.
Darn.
And we hiked that natural area reserve, and it is just as overgrown and, you know, remote as sort of described in the book. So I think that's part of it, is the interesting, you know, the interesting thing is sort of where these birds are, the threats that exist for them now that are mostly introduced threats because, you know, things come in on boats that were never there, and none of these species have developed protection against. That's why there's been such a problem with seabirds being, you know, sort of losing their habitats, because people are building and then they have cats and mongooses and rats, all of which are introduced on the Hawaiian Islands, that are getting into their nests and eating their young and killing the parent birds and stuff. And that's when we get into the conservation dogs, which is really interesting in my mind. And because I'd been so focused on law enforcement canines, this wasn't a type of working canine that I was that familiar with. But as I got more into the, you know, the information about them, they're really amazing dogs. And where most of the dogs are, you know, law enforcement dogs are trained to either track people or to look for explosives or drugs, these are dogs that are trained to look for a specific kind of bird or animal so that they can find nests, and then the people, the conservationists can build, you know, sort of structures around the nests so that the predators can't get into them, and it saves, you know, it saves the seabird eggs and the seabirds themselves. So they're really amazing.
That's incredible. So for obviously, I always love this because, from a novice, just a casual reader or fan, you know, I'm not sure how much they know about all the details, but there's a lot of research going into this novel. You know, there's a lot to know. And were you more in tune with, you knew some of this knowledge about the birds and some they're going through extinction, these type of things, and that drove the storyline? Or was it more once you got into the storyline, and of course you had to go to Hawaii, that was a given, but through the research, then did you find out more about this situation, about the birds and extinction and the uniqueness of it?
Every book is planned differently. This particular book, it's funny that there was a girlfriend who sent me an article about the 2023 Kilauea eruption, the volcanic eruption. And I had just finished writing the ninth book, Summit's Edge. They'd just been married. And I was like, ooh, volcanoes, Hawaii, that's an FBI jurisdiction. So I actually, in this case, the location came first. And then I had to go back and figure out what the crime would be. And the Hawaiian Islands actually are frustratingly low on federal crimes, and it has to be a federal crime to fit into the whole FBI jurisdiction thing. But then I kind of got into, you know, that one of the big problems on the island is just, you know, the rate of extinction of many of the species, and trafficking is a real problem. And I mean, most people think of wildlife trafficking as being rhinoceros horns in Africa. It can also be lizards and hardwoods and birds. And so if, you know, and for people who are into that kind of prize, so to speak, the more rare it is, the better. And they really don't care that they could be putting a species at risk.
Yeah, they don't think about that aspect of it.
No.
And you're right. I think the diversity of what we call domestic animals nowadays, you know, or some of the animals should not be domesticated at all, but it's tending to trend in that direction. You know, yes, you know, we've got our dogs, we've got our cats, and if we're on a ranch or have a farm, we have horses, these things. But a lot of the exotic animals are real, especially for a younger group, if they can afford it, are more in tune with that. That's what they like. And like you said, the rarer it is, the more people want it, which
they
is,
see it as a collector's item, but yeah, it's not. It's a living creature.
Exactly. And don't think of the long-term ramifications of it.
Yeah.
So I love the fact that, you know, you've got the framework of this is the 10th novel in the series. So I know you know the characters and got ahead of the framework, but I love the fact that you almost sort of, I wouldn't say backed into it, but you went in a different direction. You know, you found the research and did the research behind it and really delved into that, and then figured out how you were going to maneuver it back into what we know as the FBI K-9 series.
Yeah. And Hawaii was an interesting place, too, because it wasn't just the birds, it was the volcanoes. And I have to admit, you know, I live in the Great Lakes Basin just outside of Toronto. So volcanoes are not really even on our radar. And so that was the other thing with this book, was that I figured this was going to be my one and only chance to use that particular natural danger, which just because it just, you know, an eruption kind of starts coming in towards the end of the book, and it just ramps up the risk to everybody involved at that moment.
I love that. And Hawaii is such a unique place to begin with, in so many facets, and each of the islands are unique. So it sounds like, you know, you're going to have to make the 11th, 12th, and 13th part of the novel for the other islands, because and drag your husband along with
you. That's right. Yes, he's a very good sport. Actually, the 11th book takes place in Mammoth Cave National Park in Kentucky. And so late summer, early fall, he and I did some caving trips.
Absolutely.
To do research for that. So you got to kind of get your feet wet.
Absolutely. Well, I know that area well. My family heritage came from around that area. So we've been to Mammoth Cave many, many, many times.
No, it's amazing.
It is an amazing place for sure.
Yep.
All right. We're going to take a quick commercial break. We'll come back, talk to Sarah Driscoll a little bit more about her latest book, Deadly Trade. And we then want to talk to her about her writing in general. So everybody hang tight. We'll come back right after this commercial break. You're listening to Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio.
Real people, real stories.
Our little dog developed this lymph problem, but the chemotherapy lasted for 6 months, started developing more lymph nodes. So I thought I'd just try carnivore. The lymph nodes started to go down. Then I took him into the vet to have him checked out, and there was no signs at all inside.
My cat had issues that developed in his eye, and 3 months later, my veterinarian said, let's go ahead and remove the eye. I heard the carnivore advertising. So I said, you know what? I'm going to order this product. They did the procedure. They did all the tests, and they said, I don't know what you did. This product saved his eye.
I've got a Labrador. He could hardly lift herself up off the floor. The treatment was chemotherapy. That's when I said, this could be the ticket. About 3 weeks, you could tell. She was very alert. She was going on 5 mile walk. She is just like prime again.
Call 866-836-8735. That's 866-836-8735. Or visit carnivore.com. That's CARNIVORA.com.
Use promo code PETLIFE at checkout for 15% off your order at carnivora.com.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio. Continue our conversation with author Sarah Driscoll and her latest book, Deadly Trade, part of the FBI Canine novel series. Now, Sarah, when you put together this book, or maybe even the series in general, is there a goal that you have? When everybody picks up a copy of Deadly Trade and they read through it, is there something that you're thinking, I hope they get this out of the book? And if not, are there some surprises sometimes you get from your fans?
I mean, to me, I guess the point of the series is just I like to read books myself where even when the rest of the world doesn't really seem quite fair, you come out of it feeling like there's been some emotional justice. So that, you know, even when bad stuff happens, often to good people, there's hope that, you know, at least some justice will be found at the other side of it. So that's kind of the underlying theme that goes through all of the books.
Nice. And I loved how when we first started talking, you know, I talked to a lot of authors. I'm really blessed on this. And a lot of them have wonderful, great series of books that they write. And there's two parts that always strike me as amazing. One is, how in the world do you keep the characters straight from one to the other? And two, I guess, or A plus one, how do you make sure you don't kill off one of the characters that people love? And you never kill off the dog, so I know that for sure. And then with you, when we first started talking, you rattled off in number 8, we do this, and number 9, we're doing that. Because I talked to some authors, and they're like, I hope I got that right. Was that in number 1, or was that in number 3 when, you know, Harry bit the dust, you know, those things. So I guess the question in general is, how do you keep that sorted out? How do you keep the characters reoccurring and fresh? And how do you know not to kill off one of the fan favorites? You're going to get a lot of bad social media marks on it, we'll say.
Well, and you're right. I mean, I've had people email me before and saying, you're not going to kill the dogs, are you? I'm like, no. None of the 4 main dogs are going to die because I wouldn't be able to live with myself if it was that. I guess my answer to how do I keep it all organized is, and this is sort of like really sort of in the weeds technical stuff, is I use Scrivener when I'm writing. And so each book I do, I grab the last book, Scrivener, wipe out all the prose, but it's got all of the character descriptions for each character. I've got a running list of what year and what time period each book is and that kind of thing. So that kind of helps keep me organized because I also have, you know, a 5-book series. Well, I'll be starting the 6th book on that one in the NYPD Negotiators.
Right.
So I do the same thing with that too, because, you know, I have a cast of characters there. And all of my books seem to sort of take law enforcement from sort of a side angle. Like it's not just the gumshoe detective or that kind of thing. It's always law enforcement that's not just sort of the mainstream. So it's hostage negotiation or it's, you know, canine work. But each series, I like to write a group ensemble. So each series has a fairly large cast of recurring characters. And so, I mean, that may seem kind of, you know, brass tacks kind of way to do it, but it really makes a big difference in, you know, in helping me keep things in line. And even if it's just something as simple as what weapon Logan is using in the Negotiators or what search and rescue knife she carries as her general sort of equipment. Like it's little details like that that are really easy to forget. So that helps.
I love that. And you know, and that's a great tool to use. I mean, when I talk to authors about this, you know, it's a matter of you get intimate with your characters. And, you know, they become part of your life. You know who they are and what they do. So sort of I wouldn't say the basic things, but the surface things are, to me at least, are easy to remember. But when you get down, like you said, the specifics, what knife was it? Because I'm assuming she doesn't pull out her favorite knife and every, you know, it's not like every time you write a book, she's got to have this knife with her. You know, it's
it's some of her gear, and you have to assume she has it with her every time, but she doesn't necessarily always need to use it.
Exactly. So to reflect back into, you know, book number three, when the last time she used it, as an example, you know, it's you have to have these tools to be able to do that. And I love that. I love how you do that. It's great. And like you said, it's a challenge because you brought up the NYPD Negotiator series. So now you're juggling two. You've got 10 in this series, and NYPD Negotiator series is number what?
Number five comes out in April, and number six will be the year after.
So you're juggling both of them. So then let's go back to that then. How do you do that as a writer? I mean, obviously, and your editor saying, okay, remember, April 1st is the deadline. You got to get the last draft in. But other than that, how do you keep one separated from the other? And from a writing standpoint, are there certain timelines? Like, okay, I need to at least spend 4 months with this book, or I need to spend, you know, 3 months starting this book.
Well, the last couple of years, I've been writing 3 books a year. So I only have about 4 months to write each book, start to finish. And that's while I'm doing copy edits for the book before, or proof pages for the book before that, or launching the book before that. So it's been a lot of overlap. So that's been a little bit challenging. But as far as keeping them sort of separate, I found it hard. I didn't start into the Negotiator series until I was about 5 books into the FBI Canines. And so for the first couple of years doing the Negotiators, it was kind of hard to sort of, I'd have to kind of go back and really review the previous book or books to kind of get my head back into that space. Now I'm lucky that I'm this far in, I can kind of just gear shift and flip back to the other characters, because they're now very sort of rock solid in my head.
Very nice. Wow. Now, going back to writing in general, yeah, I read your bio, and you spent 30 years as an infectious disease researcher. Is that right? Or in infectious disease. I love that. First of all, you finally, you know, you found your passion, took that leap of faith, and you're doing fantastic. So kudos for you on all that. But, you know, you're shifting gears in my mindset when I read through your bio. It's okay, I'm spending all this time in infectious research, but now I want to write, you know, canine and NYPD cop series stuff, you know, negotiating stuff. How do you make that switch? How did you take that leap of faith? How did you know that? Did you wake up one day, say, oh, screw it, I'm done with this, I'm going on to the next thing?
Well, actually, there's a series that I wrote before those two series, which was the Abbott and Lowell Forensic Mysteries. And that was kind of the gateway into the other ones. That was more of a typical sort of shoe gum detective. Like, that was Lee Abbott is a series is still out there.
You better get it.
Was a homicide detective with the Essex Police Department in Massachusetts, but she was working with a forensic anthropologist, and that was where the science aspect came in. So that 5-book series is pretty heavy on the science. And so that was kind of my introduction into, you know, publishing. But it was also, it kind of balanced my love of science with my love of writing. And then when that series finished, it was just, I dropped the science and just went into straight sort of law enforcement. But again, you know, through a side corridor, you know, so not just straight murders and stuff.
Right. And that's an amazing way to do it. You know, it's you take what you know and write about it, and then eventually, you know, continue on with that knowledge, but then start writing things that you are fascinated with. Because I can tell from talking to you that, you know, you enjoy digging into these things. You enjoy going to Mammoth Cave, Kentucky, to investigate what that's all about, to put that into the next book.
Yeah, no, I mean, the research is part of the fun for me. And maybe that's what came out of the scientific research background, is that I like to sort of get into stuff. As I said, like for Hawaii, I didn't know about the birds, I didn't know about the volcanoes, but I got into it. And so you can learn an awful lot of stuff, you know, through the internet and through reading. And best still is, of course, if you can manage it, is going to the actual sites.
Absolutely. Yeah, I agree with that totally, because the information's out there. You know, you can go to the library. People still go to the library, folks. So, and pick up a copy of our books when you're there, just in case. But or go to the bookstore. That's even better. Pick up one there. But in any case, I digress. But yeah, getting that opportunity to go there, because it'd be so easy for me, I would think about this, to write about what I know in the places I know. But I would, as a writer, would rather go to places and have excuses to go to Hawaii and go to Kentucky and these things.
That was one of the reasons why I wanted to go to Hawaii, is I'd been to Florida and California and the Bahamas, and none of those places are a good substitute for Hawaii. It's a very distinct climate, and you know, just the people there are wonderful. I couldn't replace it by any of the past places I'd gone, so I knew I really had to go.
I love it. I love it. Well, everybody go out and pick up a copy of the book and pick up the whole series while you're there. The latest is Deadly Trade by Sarah Driscoll. It's part of the FBI K-9 novel series. And go ahead and get started with all the other series as well while you're there. Sarah, thanks so much for coming on the show. Congratulations on another success story. I really enjoyed it thoroughly. And now I need to get back to Hawaii. That's it.
I'm sorry if I put that bug in your ear, but you know.
Thank you.
It's definitely a worthwhile trip. Thank you so much for having me. It's been a fun conversation.
Oh, my pleasure. My pleasure. And we'll make sure we get the your sites posted, SarahDriscollAuthor.com and all the other wonderful social media sites. Keep track of what Sarah's got going on, the latest, greatest, maybe even sneak an appearance every once in a while to meet her in person. So thanks again, Sarah, for coming on the show. Everybody pick up a copy of the book, Deadly Trade by Sarah Driscoll.
Thanks so much.
Well, we're coming to the end of the show today. I want to thank everyone for listening to Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio. I want to thank the producers and sponsors for making this show possible. If you have any questions, comments, or ideas for the show, or the people you want to hear from most, drop us a line. You can go to PetLifeRadio.com. We'll be glad to answer your questions, entertain your comments, and bring down the people you want to hear from most. And while you're there, check out all the other wonderful shows. It is a Barking Fun Festival. That's at PetLifeRadio.com. You know, until next time, write a great story about the animals in your life, and who knows, you may be the next guest on Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio. Have a great day.
Let's Talk Pets, every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.